Hey guys, it's time for the For Those Who Inquired podcast. It's a rainy Wednesday night in Murray, Kentucky, and I'm here with the coolest guy in town, Neil Bradley. Neil, yeah, what's going on,
man? You know, you could turn the heat on, Ed. It'd be really nice, but it's 52 here in the house. But anyway, you have coffee. I have a nice cold drink. But yeah, I am the coolest guy in Murray at the moment.
When you walked in the house, I said, hey, should we turn the heat on? And you were like, no, I think we're good. And I was like, yeah, you're warm enough. You're hot enough to carry the heat. But now you're just outing me on my own podcast. I love it. Well done. I've earned this roast. I could have the dishwasher turn the heat on right now if you want me to do that. Do you mean text her?
I don't think she even likes that I'm even over here.
Oh, no, she doesn't mind at all. Yeah. She knows that you at least drum some sense into my mind, right, and keep me straight.
Once I was admiring your dice collection, I got the snarl like, jeez, it's not another one.
If it's really funny you say that. So this is her kitchen table, and as soon as she got it, I immediately started playing Dungeons & Dragons on it. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, within 2 hours. Mm. It was large enough. All my friends came over. Yeah. We hosted Dungeons & Dragons.
And it's a good rolling table. Oh, it's perfect. It doesn't have a lot of ridges in it to affect the dice roll.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's absolutely a safe place to roll dice. So that's actually, strangely enough, a perfect segue because it looks like Murray State men's basketball and two commits have rolled the dice.
If you count the walk-on, we got a full team. We can play some games now.
You got five guys.
We got five guys. So we could play some hoops right now.
Yeah. So if you were going closer. If you're going right now, we've got. I just want to go. We'll break this down. But you're exactly right. You got five guys you can put on the floor. You've got Rod Thomas.
Yeah.
Again, it seems Braxton Stacker fully involved and seems to continue to. Send no indication that he's exploring other opportunities, and he is inked as part of his scholarship deal. You have Justin Morgan, who of course had recommitted and reaffirmed.
Right,
DJ Burns, we've already talked about. So there's technically four. We've got a rotation guy technically.
Yeah.
So you have Quincy Anderson, who is from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We'll get into some of his numbers in a minute, and then just literally like an hour and a half ago, former Tennessee Tech freshman and Madisonville North Hopkins star, terrific high school player, actually really starting to develop into
him at Murray State, but I mean, he chose Tennessee Tech.
Yeah.
I liked him.
There was interest there.
Yeah.
And now Kenny White from Tennessee Tech, Tennessee Tech commit and signee, played 2 years there under John Pelfrey, and has now hit the portal and has come to Murray. And there was some considerable interest in some different avenues for him. So I want to give due credit first to Quincy Anderson, who technically becomes the first outside commitment for Steve Prohm and his guys. Just a few notes on him, and I know you've seen some of the replay and some of his tape. Neil, I know you've seen some of his numbers as well, but let's break a little bit of that down. I have 25 tabs open, Neil. Quincy Anderson is, at the moment, again, Oshkosh, Wisconsin native. He's 6'4", 200, was a sophomore this past year at D2 Minnesota State. I know that probably doesn't, I don't know, jazz a few guys. 6'4", 200, he's a lefty. Heck of a shooting stroke. Can attack the rim either side. Does like to go left-hand, right side and things like that, but that's typically difficult to defend. This is a kid, and I say kid, young man, who, by the way, shot 37% from three, made 53 pointers, shot 47.2% from the field, shot 75% from the free throw line, which
I like that.
That translates wherever. That doesn't change. And then 17.8 points per game for Minnesota State. Now, a few big time notes for him. Former two-star shooting guard, helped win a state championship in Minnesota alongside Tyrese Halliburton, who, by the way, is a borderline all-star who just got traded from Sacramento to the Indiana Pacers. Oh, and by the way, Steve Prohm coached Tyrese Halliburton at Iowa State. So there's obviously a very
little link there, maybe.
Little familial connection
for
Anderson and the family. You have this situation. Coming out of high school, he committed to Minnesota State in 2018, April of 2018. His offers coming out of high school were Chico State and Concordia St. Paul. So I get that there's probably not a ton of D1 interest for this young man, but he certainly has a strong link to an NBA All-Star and certainly has built his own resume as a terrific D2 player. You go back, Neil, and you look at some of the numbers that he's built on. And again, I don't know what this – I'm not good at the whole translation game. I don't know what D2 success translates to a D1 perspective. Kid's going to have a whole summer – young man. I keep saying kid. Sounding like an old man here. This young man is going to have a whole summer to renegotiate his tactic and what he's supposed to provide this team. I'm not sure. Steve may recruit him because he wants him to be his next two guard. I don't know. But you have a situation where you go look at his stats, and, I mean, lifetime, he's only gone from basically about 4 points per game. The last two seasons, Neil, he's averaged more than 17 points per game. So he's been a consistent shooter for 2 years.
Right. And I don't know that anyone expects you're going to get that from him. If you did, that'd be great, but I don't know that you would expect that. But from that, I think you're going to have a lot of experience, and it's a really good piece. It's not going to be a kid that's going to be shocked when he gets out on a college basketball floor and goes, oh, I can't compete with these guys. I think he'll definitely be, at the very least, a nice piece that you could bring off the bench. And who knows? He may be good enough to work his way into a starting lineup. Just don't know enough about him until he gets together with the other players.
Well, and I do want to talk about more career numbers.
He'll start right now, though.
Yeah.
Because you only have five.
You got five, and a backup.
But we'll see later.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to get at is when I'm looking at things like this, I'm looking at trends. This is a guy that's averaged no less than 3 rebounds a game throughout his entire D2 career. As a matter of fact, he averaged more than 5 this past year, more than 6 last year. So he's definitely interested in rebounding. His free throw shooting has been 80% or better all 3 years, just about. They're at or a little better. That, I feel like, translates the free throw line. It didn't go back 6
right.
more inches in D2.
At every level, it's the same.
Exactly. At three-point percentage, he's been 34% or better all 3 years at Minnesota State. So it's one of those things where, like, yes, maybe he doesn't have as big of a role here. And we'll review this a year from now. You and I look at this, and we'll see how the year went and be like, oh, okay, well, that's what he was. Percentage-wise, I see consistency. I see a trend of model performance from a young man that's 6'4 and 200.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good get, especially early in the process here. I still believe some of the Racers' better players likely will be yet to come.
Sure.
But they're looking at the top offers, and once those get gobbled up, they'll start to trickle down, and I think you'll start to see many more sign over the coming weeks. But that he's a good get. I like him.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that you just said. I love the way that you said that. It's a food chain.
Exactly.
I hate to say it that way. I know that Murray State fans want to be snagging some 5 stars, some 4 stars. Let's land $100,000.
It's a long line.
Yeah, it's a long line. First of all,
yeah,
just is. And second of all, your staff just moved here. I'm sure Antoine Jackson, Cole Christian, you know, Jonathan Maddox, they're trying to get their families here. You know, so it feels like it's been an eternity when it's really only been about 17 days. Excuse me. I say these things full up from a nice dinner. You landed Kenny White an hour and a half ago as we're recording this podcast, who last year averaged 10 points per game, about 4 rebounds, assist and a half, shot 47% from the field. Oh, and by the way, when he entered the starting lineup, Matt McMahon mentioned it. You know, we talked about Kenny White as the season was rolling along. Several people mentioned it. I know Kenny Roth mentioned it. You mentioned it on several radio casts that Tennessee Tech changed this year when Kenny White was inserted into the starting lineup.
He made a difference.
And he took advantage of it. Here's a guy who last year, as a true freshman, he averaged 7 points. I think a lot of people are starting to see, oh, that's kind of nice. Shot only 38% from the field. This year, again, I've already mentioned he averaged 47% from the field, 40% from three.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a guy that's 6'7", 200. And a legit, I'd say, it's probably more 6'6", but seriously, from Madisonville, nice local kid, young man that absolutely, you go to his game log from this past season, and I mean, Neil, last game of the season against Moorhead, 14 points, Austin Peay, and a win on March 2nd, 10 points. A win at U-Team or versus U-Team Martin, 18 points. He scored a, looks like a career high, 24 points against Wright State, which, by the way, made the NCAA tournament. You know, 23 points in a win against SIU Edwardsville, 17 points in a win against Eastern Illinois, 16 points in an overtime loss against Belmont. And we were all watching that game that night thinking Tennessee Tech was going to snipe them, then lost in overtime. So against some really, really good teams and some big-time performances, he's been really strong.
And I think he'll get better. I mean, I think he's good now, and I think there's still improvement in his game. He's definitely a young man that could start for the Racers. I mean, again, don't know what the roster is going to be, but if he's in the starting lineup, that doesn't mean you're a bad team. I like him.
Yeah, no, he's a nice piece, and I know that I think a lot of Racer fans are kind of waiting for that momentum shift on when's a commit coming.
But you want the point? You're still looking for that point guard.
Jacoby Wood visited today on an
official. Still looking for that one guy that's like, oh yeah, we got one. Because until you get one of those who's a really good one, the rest of the pieces don't matter. You're going to be an average team at best.
Yeah.
Just going to be, especially in this situation, because it's not like you, wow, we've recruited this massive power forward, a major small forward. You just can't do it without a point guard.
Yeah.
If you go into the Missouri Valley Conference point and you guard have a or two, bad point guard.
Or two guard.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. I'll take a point guard that can still give me 5 points, 4 assists a game, as long as you can get a strong two guard. Yeah. The backcourt.
And don't turn it over.
Right.
And make free throws.
The backcourt has to be effective.
Yes.
At all levels, but especially at the Missouri Valley. You make a great point, you know, and I know that there's visits scheduled. There has to be, obviously. You got 8 scholarships left. I think that's the number one thing I keep telling myself in my head mathematically. You're still working on Jackson Edwards, who's an original signee out of Indianapolis. Certainly still having conversations with that young man. And then you're wondering, where do the other, let's say he retakes his scholarship, that leaves you with 7. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. 7 guys.
Yeah.
And you don't care really where they come from. I know you and I have talked about mathematically what makes sense. You probably want a graduate transfer in there somewhere.
Now, looking at a lot of freshmen now, because that 3 is about enough.
Three's good.
Yeah, that's good.
On a team of 13 guys, 3 freshmen is a solid, solid. And you can tell those 3 freshmen, hey, we didn't over-recruit over you. We seriously, like, mm-hmm. I mean, Steve and the staff can look at those guys and be like, hey, you're probably going to have an opportunity next year.
Right.
Maybe now. We're rebuilding the roster. We're rebuilding the team. Welcome to Murray. Unpack your bags and get to the court because you're going to get some minutes. We're going to need to see what you can do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get some guys that are going to be instant seniors, very likely, either from the JUCO level. Well, no, not JUCO, because mathematically that wouldn't work. You're going to get a redshirt junior who in this day and age is very likely going to play his year and say, I'm going to be a graduate transfer. Uh-huh. It's how the portal works now. Or you're going to get a graduate transfer now that's like, oh, I'd really like an OSU degree from Murray. Maybe I've got a chance at a small NIL. And Steve's got 25 minutes a game for me. I'll see you guys here in about a week or so. I know that the portal closes up relatively soon, not to make a Marvel reference, but the portal is swelling right now with talent. It has more than 1,400 players in it currently. I think more than 250 of them have already made decisions, whether they're going to either stick with the NBA or stick with a new program, or I think 20 or 30 or so have decided to come back. So that leaves you with roughly 1,100 players currently floating in this multiverse ether, and they're going to have to make a decision in the next 3 weeks.
And I talked with one coach today, something that you may not know, fans may not know, just because you decide to come back doesn't mean you can come back.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the coach's blessing to do that once you enter that portal.
Correct.
Yeah. So, obviously DJ did. But just because of, hey, nothing was out there, I want to come back home. It was like, no, we're filled up. Or we've recruited way past
you. We've recruited you, past you. You made that decision.
Something along that line. And that's the risk that's always taken when you get into the portal. Guys with a lot of talent usually are not going to have a problem finding a team, for sure. But they may not find the team they want where they want it.
Well, and speaking of that, I know we talked last week about Daquan Smith going with Radford. We learned earlier this week Nicholas McMullen is committed to UNC Asheville. Certainly a terrific program. Keeps him and this demographic. Wish him nothing but the best.
Oh, yeah.
Thought he took a big leap.
Good hard worker.
Rotation player. Yeah. And, you know, I know when Steve said, hey, you know, let's see where our locker room sits. Let's all see what happens when we hit the portal.
Right.
That was a possibility. And so I wish Nicholas nothing but the best. Speaking of other former racers, and again, it's worth reiterating right now, mathematically, as Jackson Edwards continues to, you know, to take a look at things like Butler and whatnot, which makes sense. Butler's in his hometown. Just had Thad Mata, you know, take a job there. It's certainly worth a look for him. You hope Jackson still sticks with his sign and commitment. He certainly has a decision to make, and wish him nothing but the best there. But you've got a bunch of former racers right now. I think KJ, somebody was telling me the other day, KJ's actually practicing with several guys elsewhere right now, trying to prepare for whatever the NBA draft holds. And his chance at the transfer portal apparently was practicing with former Louisiana Tech forward Kenny Lofton Jr., who is just really good. It's just Kenny's terrific.
Is that the Kenny Lofton's son, the one that played with the Indians?
You know, I always have wanted to know that.
And remember, Kenny was a standout at Arizona State, whichever. I mean, he was really good.
You know what?
Otherwise, why would you use the Kenny Lofton Jr.? You'd just be Kenny Lofton, I would think. Sorry, Ed, I asked you a question that we hadn't researched.
No, I'm researching it now because I honestly, I cannot remember. No, I'm glad you asked it because I just... You know what? We're doing this. Thank you. Thank you, Wikipedia. Kenny Lofton Jr.'s father, also named Kenneth, obviously, served in the United States Army, worked in the United States Postal Service for 18 years, and was elected to the Port Arthur Independent School District
Board of Trustees.
It is not. No. No. But his older sister apparently played college basketball for Southern, which makes sense. That's in Louisiana. His grandfather, Rock Duhon, was a track and field athlete at Southern University as well, where he's named to the Track Hall of Fame, also competed in the United States Olympic Trials. So, no, not the Kenny Lofton of the Cleveland Guardians.
He never played for the Guardians.
Never played for the Guardians. He was a Cleveland Indian.
He attended University of Arizona on a basketball scholarship. It helped him to the Final Four in 1988. Didn't join the baseball team until he was a junior and thought, you know, pretty good at this.
I think I'm going to give baseball a shot.
And then boom.
Remind me, Kenny Lofton is slightly during my time as a young lad who grew up watching a lot of baseball. Wasn't he a prolific base stealer?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
622 stolen.
Oh, yeah.
Bases.
So he's prolific. Yeah. I wasn't too
far. I said the Indian. He played with the Indians two spells.
Did he play with Jim Thome?
But he started with the Astros organization 91. Yeah, he did. 92 through 96.
Yeah. So he's.
Indians again, 98 through 2001, then ended his career with the. Hi, thanks for your career in 2007. But he also played with the White Sox, the Giants, the Braves, the Pirates, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Phillies, the Dodgers, and the Rangers.
He bounced around.
He was a...
But he stole more than 600 bases
in
his life.
622 bases.
I remembered. Why did I remember? I don't
really know. Good defensive outfielder, too.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. That was a terrific sidetrack. So to go back,
at least we know now if someone says, I wonder if that's getting... It's not.
It's not. So now we know. We solved the issue. So yes, KJ currently hooping with some other notable college athletes. Kenny Lofton Jr., of course, also in the portal. I think there's some expectation that he could either return to Conference USA or, of course, land at a big-time, you know, top 30 program. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, his coach transferred, you know, and took the job at Tulsa. So it's one of those situations. I don't know if Kenny Lofton goes to Tulsa. But because that's an American move to the, that'd be a move to the American, which is technically a step up from Conference USA. But you wonder where Kenny's, you know, where his talents will go. Shaq Buchanan signed with Tandem, as did Tevin Brown. So Ja Morant's agency is just rolling in racer guys right
they
now.
Are.
It's Ja, Shaq, Darnell Cowart, of course, playing for the Memphis Hustle as well, getting some time there. And now Shaq Buchanan joins alongside Tevin Brown. So it's kind of interesting there. That's you take a look at that team, makes you wonder where KJ's headed from a signing perspective. You know, if he makes the decision to go to the NBA early or decides to play one more year in college. I mean, you got to think there's probably I don't want to speak for anybody and their family and their businesses, but I'd have to think, you think about it though, Neil, it's crazy. That whole starting five at one point would be, you know, all with tandem, which is kind of crazy to think about.
No kid.
It's fun to reminisce about those teams, man. It really is. I think about it a lot. I was surfing through some of my emails the other day, cleaning out my Gmail, and I still had probably 200 emails from Dave and all those photos from that season. Of course, you were on the road a lot that year with, you know, with Kenny, and I was on the road a lot, and I found myself next to Dave Winder often taking photos of those John Morant years. And it's hard to not think about them and just be like, man, that was such a whirlwind of a time. But it is crazy to think that they all might be represented by tandem at some point in their careers all at the same time. Want to pivot a little bit to women's basketball because there's clearly been some big time news there. Congratulations to Wyatt Faust. We'll start there. Funny note, I'll say this because I thought it was just kind of comedic. Sometimes when you're an accidental journalist, you accidentally stumble on news. And even though I don't cover Murray State Athletics much anymore for pay, just more for fun, I texted Wyatt because they landed Jenna Walker, transfer freshman point guard from Western Kentucky, who we'll discuss in a moment. And I was like, hey, neat. You know, I was like, you know, nice grab, you know, fairly, you know, local commit, fairly local. You had some connection there, some tie. Great grab. And he was like, yeah, they got a good one. And I was like, wait a second. What do you mean? I'm bringing up her stats here. Give me just a second. I was like, what do you mean they? Like, they? That means not you. And he was like, yeah, I can't really talk about it just yet. And I was like, oh, he's got something going on. So texted a couple sources, went straight to the, quote, horse's mouth, so to speak. And come to find out, Mr. Faust is going to be the second assistant for the University of Buffalo women's basketball program. And, wow, I mean, that's what a move from Dobo to Buffalo.
It is. Obviously, Wyatt is immersed in basketball and didn't Google climate of Buffalo, New York before accepting that job.
All he needs to do is just call Jonathan Harkey and figure out real quick. Holy smokolies. Just made those words up. Buffalo finished 25-9 last year and lost to Tennessee in the opening round of the NCAA tournament, 80-67. And they led at halftime, or they were down 2 at half. So Buffalo's pretty good.
Yeah. It's a good, really good move. I know, joking about the climate there, but really good move for Wyatt.
I wasn't good kidding dude. About saying he's got to call Jonathan Harkey for Buffalo tips. My goodness. Harkey working for the Buffalo Bills after a great career at Murray State. Harkey and I are still really close friends and talk a lot about music and sports and racer athletics. And Buffalo's just something else, man. It's another world, I feel like. Just, you're exactly right about the climate.
It'll be 74 there Sunday, though.
Yeah, but okay. But so
Sunday, he'll go,
this isn't that bad.
This isn't so bad.
And then next January, he'll go, oh, my gosh.
I have 74 inches of snow in my front yard.
I can't get out of my house.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Congratulations. That's probably, unfortunately, I'm sure Rochelle is excited about the jump that he's made. But it's also one of those situations like, dang it, man, we got to hire Adobo or promote somebody within and go hire that. So, congrats to Wyatt Faust. Back to...
He'll also learn the meaning of lake effect snow.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's
a real thing. Yeah, when you're only projected to get about 6 inches of snow, but then lake effect, when the wind blows another 6 feet under the front of your home... with wind shear.
I used to live in Cleveland. There's Cleveland.
Yeah.
You go along Lake Erie, and you end at Buffalo.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's a weird thing. I recall an instance when, I don't remember who was going to whose house, but it was several miles from one end of the town to the other, and one end of the town had snowflakes. The other one had about 8 inches of snow. It was the lake effect stuff that just sat on top of you, and it snowed until it just ran out of precipitation. It's just the craziest thing ever.
The clouds are literally empty.
He'll see what that is up there. But we wish him the best. He's a great, great dude. And you're going to hear a lot about his name in coming years in basketball.
Well, and I got to think, I'm not really trying to prognosticate too terribly far, but he and his family have long been close to Murray ever since they first got here. Mm-hmm. I got a feeling it's probably not the last time we hear YFS.
Well, it may not. May not be.
I don't know. Just a hunch. Just a hunch. I'll save that for a rainy day as well. We'll see kind of where that goes. But the reason that we were even talking about Wyatt, of course, big move for him, started with me texting him about Jenna Walker. Hey, you got a backup point guard, another guard that can play, D1 transfer. Jenna Walker is a 5'8 transfer from Western Kentucky as a freshman. She's originally from Priceville, Alabama, and some of this is from Go Racers. She had a terrific high school career at Priceville. She played 6 years varsity, scored more than 1,700 points, finished with nearly 1,000 assists, more than 350 steals. I mean, her senior year, she averaged more than 13 points and 6 assists. She was their big-time class player of the year in Alabama. Now, I say these things. At Western, freshman year is freshman year. Sometimes you wish for that to be a little bit better. She averaged more than about 2.3 points per game, almost a rebound, almost an assist, but only shot 26% from the field. Low opportunity.
Does it have their minutes a game?
Minutes per game, 14.
Okay. So she saw some time.
So she definitely saw some time. I want to see. Let me look at her game log super quick while we're standing here. She never scored more than 3 points in a game. I mean, we're talking. There's only two games where she took more than six shots. Four total games that she took six or more shots. Not a lot. Not a lot of opportunity there. And we know as well as anybody, Neil, when you're not getting a ton of shot opportunities, the percentage is either one way, way high, or one way, way low. And it's very rarely is it that 40 to 50% consistency mark. So we'll see what that turns out to be. Western ended up finishing four games back of Charlotte in the Conference USA East standings last year. They went 18-12, 11-7 in conference play. We'll see if that means anything for Jenna moving forward. The other signee, preferred walk-on, is one that needs a little introduction, but let's give her one anyways because she's had a terrific career at Marshall County, and that's Hallie Lange, who I absolutely love. She is not only is she just sweet and kind, but she's just an absolutely terrific athlete. Mm-hmm. And it starts more for me watching her play volleyball.
Right.
This is a young lady that can jump out of the dang gym from a volleyball perspective. She was an outside hitter for the Lady Marshals for 4.5 years. She's ridiculously athletic. Lanky Lange. I don't know. That's not a good nickname. She just has a ton of athleticism. From what I was told by family early on in the season, was that she was interested potentially playing somewhere volleyball, basketball. Mm-hmm. And obviously this is an opportunity that has befallen her in a positive way to come play at Murray as a preferred walk-on, join a team. She's already got a former high school teammate in Case and Connor. They were a nice little duo for quite some time.
Yes.
And
played in a state championship game.
And one you called. And so it's like...
No, I didn't call that.
You got to see that one.
Took a year off.
But you've seen her play a lot.
Yes, I have.
And I have too. I don't know what her translation is from a D1 perspective. I know that she has D1 blood in her family. Dad's Dan Lange, former SEC Player of the Year, needs no introduction. Hannah, older sister, played at Central Arkansas for all those years, 4 or 5 years. The two of them played together for a year, year and a half. This past year alone, she averaged more than 14 points and 7 rebounds a game. She's picked up a 3-pointer, as in like the shot, mm-hmm. over the last few, last couple of years. Statistically, last year, she averaged more than 15 points and 7 rebounds a game. She was also the KABC Region 1 Player of the Year.
Yeah. For a walk-on, I'm telling you, I don't know you can do any better than that.
She's also 6'2".
Yes.
And that's not like a bad list.
And like, not a 6'2". That's like, here's two sheets of paper. See if you can maybe jump over one of them.
Yeah.
She can jump.
Yeah.
So it's not just 6'2". It's an athletic 6'2".
And we saw Rochelle explore 10, 11, couple of games, 12, but definitely 10. We saw Rochelle what I would consider to be the NBA rotation, where you've got 5 players you truly believe in, do or die, crunch time scenario, and then five players that are going to spell at different times, like a rotation minutes. I think that's extremely possible. Does Hallie Lange become part of that rotation because of her athleticism? I don't know. I shouldn't have to tell anybody, but I'm just telling you. I mean, I can't rule out the possibility of her getting some minutes. I just can't do it yet. She's just too athletic.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
So, yeah, I don't want to super hype that too much, but I just feel like that's two additions that are going to certainly shore up some depth questions moving forward. You had six women decide to, you know, move on for different adventures, either through graduation or transfer. I think, based on my math and some text messaging and some calculations and calculus, I think there's one scholarship left. I got to think one more transfer is in the books, either that or another high school signee that maybe is a late addition that's a kind of add-on. It's worth reminding people, Neil, women's basketball, and it does make it difficult, I can see that, and you can add on to this if you'd like. You've got to have 15 players on the roster plus a walk-on. That's a lot. When you have 350 plus Division I teams taking 16 women, the pool thins quickly.
Well, that's the reason you don't see the upsets. You saw a few this year, but there's still not as many in that opening round of the NCAA women's tournament.
Right.
First of all, you have some of the games that are played on a team's home court, which is horrendous. Hopefully they'll fix that at some point.
I agree. We're going
to talk about fear, but that's for another day.
I agree.
But just think of okay, let's just drop. Let's say you have an edict and you can make it 13 is the most scholarships you can have, and you know walk-ons you can have whatever walk-ons you want, but you don't have to have any. So 13. So you take 351 schools, two players off of it. So that's going to open up a ton of players. And suddenly, and I mean a lot of good ones. Now, the two from UConn, they're not coming to Murray State.
No.
But they're going to somewhere. And then those players from the – and it trickles on down.
It does.
And you get some really good players, and suddenly it distributes the talent. And right now with 15 scholarships, I mean, it is you have the teams at the top loaded.
Oh, loaded.
Loaded. Look at the player from Murray State. What's her name that went to UConn and rode the bench?
Evelyn Adebayo.
Yeah, barely played. Here, star. But could barely get any minutes up there. But, was going for a potential national championship. Didn't get it, but had a good season as far as the team goes.
You're
but
right.
I'm just telling you. It's
that feels like an eternity ago. That was just 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
You're right. It was right before COVID, and you're exactly right. You know, yes, Evelyn was incredible and was well on her way to OVC Player of the Year here. Decided to, you know, have an opportunity at UConn, get coached by Gino Auriemma.
Right.
I understand, you know, that you make that choice. The transfer portal has, you know, we talk a lot about it this year. It's been a thing now, especially with COVID in the free year, really amped things up. Certainly has been taking advantage of at the women's level, too.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, you start answering those phone calls, you get a call to go somewhere else. In the women's game, you're exactly right. The pool of talent starts to thin a little bit past scholarship, I want to say 10. Yeah. I'm not trying to be inappropriate
at all.
I'm really not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just simply stating mathematic fact. It's just the derivative.
It's kind of that way in the men's game, too.
It is.
Once you get to the 12 and 13 guys, they're not going to start for many teams.
No.
They're just really not in most instances, unless they're battling injuries or something like that.
And the thing about it is, I'm a huge fan. I love a good underdog story. I love when the 7 or the 8 guy, or even the 12 or the 13 guy, or the walk-on, scores a few points, provides a key contribution. When I was writing about college basketball on a more consistent basis, I was always looking for, what were 7, 8, and 9 doing? What's 10 doing? Because to me, even though they're not the crux of the team, sometimes when you win a game 72-70, 2 points, somebody in the 7, 8, 9 slot scored 2 points.
Yeah.
And that 2 points, you don't get it, you don't win.
Well, we the Racers won a game when it was in the, I guess, the CIT. Was that the TJ Sapp or was that the NIT? I get those mixed up.
No, there was the NIT with TJ Sapp, and then the CIT was the year prior.
Okay, so it was the NIT then. So we had to go to Missouri State. I guess, or was that this? No, this had to be the CIT.
Yeah.
Because Sapp couldn't play.
Right.
He was having a baby.
Yeah.
And we had to – Tyler Rambo got the minutes and came up with monster play. Don't win the game without Tyler Rambo.
It was against Missouri State.
Missouri State.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
And then
Tyler Rambo transferred to Indianapolis D3.
Yeah, yeah.
After that year.
But I remember that. Don't win the game. If you don't have Tyler Rambo making his plays, do not win the game. And you get TJ Sapp back, and then the rest is history.
I listened to that game on the radio, actually. I do. I believe. Were you with Paul Bubb at that time? I know that feels like an eternity ago.
I don't really remember that.
I know. It's been a while. That's been almost, and you got to think that's almost a decade ago. I remember listening to that game on the radio, though, about Tyler Rambo, and I remember being slightly frustrated he was transferring after the season. Well, this is back when I was some would still call me a homer, whatever. That's fine. You're allowed to do that.
That was one of the freakiest.
I was a fan then.
Since we have a second here, that was one of the freakiest nights ever. Because honestly, I mean, you go to Missouri State, you're supposed to lose.
You are.
That's what we were supposed to do. And we didn't. And at the end of the game, we didn't know where we were going. We sat on the bus outside the arena while they figured out where we were going.
Was this CIT?
The CIT. There was all sorts of rumors. Maybe we'll send you to San Diego. Maybe we'll send you here. And finally, they couldn't make up their mind. They just told us, go back to our hotel room. So fortunately, the hotel still had rooms available. But I get to my room. It had been stripped of all the bedding. So it was like, hey, I'm so tired. I just laid down and went to sleep with no sheets, no quilts, no blankets, no pillowcases. And then got up the next morning and found we were coming home. And I played four games at home and won the CIT.
Neil, I found that box score. You're absolutely right. Murray State beat Missouri State 66-63. Missouri State fell to 20-13. Murray State moved to 19-11. Of course, you had finished 18-11 after the tough loss against EKU. Right. This is Cameron Payne's freshman year. Okay, so you win 66-63 on March 19th, 2014. I'm glad we brought this up. This is a fun little rabbit hole here. Dexter Fields scored 9 points. Jeffrey Moss scored 10. Cameron Payne scored 19 with 5 rebounds and 3 assists, 3 turnovers. Jarvis Williams scored 20 and 10. Jesus, Jarvis, what a freaking beast. Dexter Fields, UAB transfer. Just thought I'd throw that out there. 2 points from Tyler Rambo. He played 25 minutes. But you also had to have him.
He had some other stats, too.
Oh, yeah, he had 2 rebounds and a steal and only 1 turnover and 1 foul.
And then what do you do at the free throw line?
0 for 1.
I mean, okay, all right.
He still only had the 2 points.
One of the shots was like a big shot, and then it was really big.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, not only he played 25 minutes,
yeah.
He was the key spell guy for somebody. Steve basically, as we go back to Steve basically played a 6-man rotation. CJ Ford played 9 minutes, Teron Gilmore played 3, and Zay Henderson played 3. So it was literally a 6-man rotation that included Tyler Rambo. So you talk about big,
yeah.
That's where that came from.
Another Tyler Rambo story is a shoot around one day, Tyler's shooting threes, and he bricked like 4 in a row maybe. And Steve said, hey, there's a reason they give you that shot, Tyler.
So it's funny you mentioned that
But he was good at many other things.
Murray State's defense held that Missouri State team to 41% from the field and 29% from 3. Yeah. And out-rebounded them, let's see, 34-28. Yeah. And it was 8 turnovers to 7. Low turnover game. Just defended them well.
And that was
unreal.
The next, I think we came home and played Omaha. And our fans weren't really, it's CIT. We were supposed to have some sort of an event there, Froggy.
Yeah.
They had to close the top of it, so only the lower bowl was available.
I was there
Turned out it made it great.
Because it was a terrific atmosphere.
It was jammed. But people weren't into it till this big dude from Omaha. This was pre-video. Don't have video on this because they didn't have video replay back then. Do not remember their center's name. You could probably look it up, too.
Give me a second. I'll do it.
But I think it was Jarvis, might have been. he throws a massive elbow that just missed his head. And it was one of those, like, when you watch pro wrestling, you see the guy hammer somebody with a horseshoe down his pants and then sticks it back in there while the official's chastising somebody in the corner. And the crowd's going, look, look. That was, well, once they saw the elbow, it's a guy with a weird name.
Was it Mike Rostenpoor?
That was in. That was okay. Yeah.
6 points, 12 rebounds.
And it was Bub doing it because Bub caught some heat on Twitter when he said he's a thug like Bill Laimbeer or something like that.
Oh, no. Well, at least he said Bill Laimbeer.
Well, that's what he meant. Yeah. I don't know if he called it like, but something like that. He's just that kind of he's just a bully or something like that. Plays that way. And that's what he, you know. And Laimbeer was not the kindest of players, if you'll go back and look at his video highlight.
He was not.
He was a very physical dude.
It's incredible that you mentioned that, because TJ Sapp came off the bench there for 26 minutes and scored 10 points. And then Tyler Rambo came off the bench for 15 minutes and scored 6 points. We got into this conversation because of
But that
bench
got
play.
The crowd into it. And from then on, you get, I think, what, Pacific and
And then you beat Yale. I went to all of those games in that run, and I can tell you the dishwasher, as the director of tourism here in Murray, absolutely loved home games.
Really?
That year. Oh, absolutely, because it was stay after stay after stay, and as Murray continued to host games throughout that entire season. Of course, Omaha was in the Summit League at that point, and then you've got, let's see, yeah, you beat Omaha. Oh, you have to remember, you beat Omaha, then you beat Towson 85-73 at home. Then you hosted Pacific and you beat them 98-75, and then you beat Yale in what was a tight game the entire time.
Yeah, we were kind of pooped, and that was the only game I've done in April. It was an April game. It was kind of cool. Here's the two things I remember about the Yale game. Nothing about the game, but just for grins, we looked up the endowments. Murray State's endowment, Ed, is $90.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yale's is $43 billion.
Billion?
We said, yeah, 90, B pretty much 91 million for B? The Racers to 43 billion for Yale.
Billion.
Yeah.
You mean as a B?
Yeah, with a B.
Okay.
So we figure they had 91 million like at the president's office in the drawers. If it got, they would just throw that in the fireplace to put a few more of those hundreds on the tile. Because, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Unreal.
So, but we on the basketball floor, we beat them. But
that Yale team, by the way, and I know we've completely gone down a rabbit hole here, but I don't mind it. We'll recenter focus here in just a minute. I'm just now remembering it as a fan who was going to these games. Yale shot 26% from the field in that game, 20 of 77 from the field, and actually almost won because Murray State ended up winning 65-57. That was the ye old rock fight. Well, I'll tell you who had the gas. Cameron Payne. He had 24 points, 6 assists, 7 rebounds, willed the team basically. Jeffrey Moss, of course, didn't have any legs, scored 9. Jarvis had 16. Jonathan Farrell and Dexter Fields had 3 apiece, and then TJ Sapp scored 9, and then Rambo's last game, 8 minutes and 1 point. That's what started this conversation, was Rambo being a key factor in that there CIT you. Run.
You know, yeah, it took us 8 minutes later. Where
well, but we, it matters. When you start talking about, and that originally came from the women's discussion.
That's right. Yeah, that's how far off.
That's how far off we've diverted. Let's refocus. We digressed is what we did. But bench players do find value at the college basketball level, and you've mentioned it, and I'll mention it again. There is absolutely a food chain. And as players continue to matriculate, even in the portal and through this NIL situation, men and women are going to land at Murray State that are talented and want to prove themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing that happen, both with the 1 scholarship remaining for the women and now the 8 or maybe 7 for the men. We move forward. There's been some other news, and I think this is going to help accentuate that conversation. Oscar Tshiebwe announced today that he is returning to the University of Kentucky. I know we don't typically talk about a ton of athletes outside of the Murray State purview on this podcast, but I feel like that's got some gravity because, one, I think it sends 2 messages. Well, one, the University of Kentucky has a lot of money. Oscar Tshiebwe is very likely going to make a really nice NIL deal, probably found through some exploration that maybe he wasn't going to be a first-round draft pick this year, despite being the college player.
I just don't know what, I mean, I guess I just don't know NBA talent.
Well,
he looks good to me.
He absolutely has NBA talent, and he's going to go. There's no doubt. It's just he's a little older is really what it boils down to. The classic big man really isn't part of the NBA game right now. And I say it just isn't. It's not entirely accurate. You still have your guys like Steven Adams, who you know is just a dominant defensive center for the Memphis Grizzlies, who currently is probably not going to be part of the rotation much against the Minnesota Timberwolves because Karl Anthony Towns is a generational talent at the center position who can stretch out and hit the three. But I say those things. He comes back to Kentucky, which I think is really a pro NIL play. I think it definitely proves, and we're not going to get into the weeds of the NIL this time around, but I think it's at least, and I know that Kentucky's a blue blood. I'm not a fool. I know that Kentucky has a lot of money. I know that Lexington has a lot of money, and the fan base brings a lot of money. But it is I think that helps the game. A guy like Oscar coming back can be an ambassador for, hey, the college game is still important. We don't need to be losing our hearts here thinking, oh my God, the college game's over.
And I root for Murray State, but I saw him play in the St. Peter's game. And then I've watched him throughout the season. I had instances where they were on nights when we weren't playing. And not only is he a really fantastic player, what a good young man he
is.
He is a really good young man. He's good for the game.
And it's believable.
He's good for everything.
It's real.
Yeah. I really enjoyed watching him play. I think he's a tremendous defender and rebounder. That goes without saying. But he's also a really good dude.
Yeah.
And I like seeing success come to people like that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that sends a unique message for college basketball. And again, I know this is not an underdog story. I'm not just, remember the Titans. Like, no, I understand. He is a terrific talent that's going to be in a top five team next year and that there's a lot of money involved. But it does certainly send a message that, hey, the college game still has a lot of value, and here's why. Talon Cooper, former Morehead State point guard, who I thought had been terrific for Preston Spradlin, is very much going the same route as wherever Jani Broom is going to land. We know that he's narrowed his top eight teams. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Talon Cooper is going to Minnesota, going to the Big 12, and you know, that's where it's probably hard. That's the counterbalance. It's like, well, if the portal's going to be open, what happens when you do develop a talent that you love and you believe in and they take their skills to the next level? Does that mean mid-major basketball is a development playground for high-major basketball? It's a fair discussion. Maybe at some point you and I can dive into that, but kids have opportunity. Talon Cooper is taking his. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing how Preston rebuilds Morehead State. Already gotten a couple of commits in the last week. So, again, I think that's interesting. And then Antonio Reeves, who Racer fans should know at least from one game this year at Illinois State, picked up a crystal ball for the University of Kentucky as John Calipari continues to rebuild his roster. And it kind of has to do the same thing. Illinois State loses their longtime head coach in Dan Mullen, is that right? Yeah.
Muller.
Yeah. Why did I add an N? I was thinking Chris Mullen. And Dan Muller, obviously, loses his job at Illinois State. So that roster, trying to figure out where they're going to go, Antonio Reeves might be a Kentucky Wildcat before the end of this week. So what are your thoughts? When you saw Antonio Reeves, we've seen a lot of Talon Cooper. What happens when mid-major players, Neil, take that opportunity that it really is – there's no getting around it, that colossal leap in competition and probably experience.
Well, sometimes it works out for them. Sometimes it doesn't. Take a look at Auburn. Wendell Green worked out really well for them. And he had some games where he looked like the Wendell Green we saw at times for EKU. Had a few, but overall, he had a fantastic season, helped lead them to where they were. So, you do get guys that can step in and help. And then you get some stories that don't turn out as good.
You're exactly right.
And it's just the way – and some of that might just be team chemistry and things like that. But, Cal is – he's recruited well. I'm sure if he and his staff thinks the kid can help him, I'm sure that they probably can. He probably can.
I think it's just interesting because I'm not sure what the difference between recruiting and poaching is. That's where I'm – me as just a casual observer. just as someone who just likes college basketball, pays attention to...
Well, their names in the portal, it really couldn't be considered poaching, I don't think. Could it?
I guess not. It's hard.
You're a free agent. It'd be like baseball or basketball. You're a free agent. You can sign with anybody.
It feels professional. I will say that.
Yeah. It exactly is. But I think we may have discussed this weeks and weeks ago.
We have.
It's a get back of your scholar. I have till July 1st to let you know if you're still going to be on scholarship.
You're right.
June 30th, I've decided not to renew yours. Now, may not happen, but that's the cards that the coach held. They still hold that card.
They do.
And now the players have some cards.
You and I have talked about our grievances and what we agree with on this situation.
But that thing is, that part of it's true.
You're right. You're exactly right. That's what I'm saying. We agree here.
Yes.
Like at that point, where do you build the lines, I guess, is the question.
And I don't know if there's something that can be addressed that can rectify that part of it.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We pivot to, speaking of cards... Peyton Carter turned in a really nice one. I know this is a slight pivot to a different sport entirely, but we've given basketball its due justice. And Peyton Carter this past week became the 8th racer, if I'm not mistaken, to ever win an individual title at the women's golf level. This past week, she at the Robert Trent Jones at the Shoals in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, I believe carded a 214. 71, 70, and 73 to be a 3-stroke champion and as an individual at Murray State under Velvet Milkman. It's unbelievable. Dave Weiner typed up a bunch of stats for her, but I think it just goes to suffice to say, you said this before we hit the podcast button, she had 3 bogeys on 13, 14, and 15 with a couple of terrific players, Mackenzie Neal and Erica Stutt, chasing her. As well as Delia Gibbs, Taylor Dedman, on and on down the list. They were pushing. Mackenzie Neal shot 74. Erica Scott shot 72. Gibbs and Dedman shot 71. They were pushing, and she was able to balance the ship, parred 16, 17, and 18. And we've seen a lot of the video. Dave Winder, by the way, it's almost like he used to be a journalist.
Oh, yeah.
Still is.
He knows what's going on.
Killed the coverage on the final strokes there at Muscle Shoals. And, man, what a championship win for her.
It was big. And I think he asked her when she felt like maybe she had a chance. And I think she said her irons were really solid. Everything was really going in the right spot. And pretty much after day one, I think she thought, I think I got a chance to maybe win this. And she did. Really happy for her. And I know the folks up in Henderson County are really happy too.
Well, and that's the other thing too. I think that's the cool, and I'm glad you mentioned that. You're exactly right. Henderson County, it feels like a homecoming almost. Like it feels like it's a homegrown talent in Western Kentucky.
I go up that way every year. Of course, OVC tournament for a few years, right. But also we go to Ellis Park there in Henderson.
Yeah.
Not really sure how that's in Henderson when you cross the river to get to Henderson.
True.
In Ellis Park. Nevertheless, we go there, so really familiar with it. But just delighted with her. And as you said, homegrown talent, at least in the area, and big time. And she has 2 years left if she wants to. A redshirt year, of course, she'll be back next year. And then the next year, if she wants a COVID year, she can take that 5th year if she wants to. But Velvet was telling me today, we were at a Hall of Fame meeting, and saying she's doing her practicum at 2 different schools.
That's wild.
So she's getting set to, I think, the next year going to do the student teaching part of that. So she is really busy and doing all this, plus excelling in golf.
Well, you have to remember, too, and I'm looking at the roster right now, there's not a senior on this roster. I cannot remember for the life of me who Velvet's bringing in as her freshman class next year. And you curious to see who stays with this roster, but you're not looking at, if no one transfers, 4 juniors, 3 sophomores, and 2 freshmen for a team that after day 2 was still in the hunt, so to speak, for the Ohio Valley Conference Championship. And again, a team staying in the Ohio Valley Conference, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, they're going to Missouri Valley.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, yeah, it's rifle that's just staying, and then football for the year. Sorry, just blended the tertiary sports there. But no, that's actually funny. So Peyton Carter wins the final OVC That's okay.
But she can't come back and defend that title.
She can't. That's a good point. So, wow. Eraser won the last OVC championship. Well, I mean the last that the school could compete for.
Yeah.
Huh.
And let's see, Murray State won the last men's basketball championship. Belmont won the women's championship. But all are leaving.
Yeah.
So everyone has
it'll definitely be new blood in the Ohio Valley Conference, and I'm really looking forward to seeing who rises to that top. I say those things because just really quick, I wanted to go through just some quick numbers here for Miss Carter. You take a look at just all three rounds. She had one double bogey. And then she had 10 birdies, 7 bogeys. So 10 birdies, 7 bogeys, and 1 double bogey. And then the rest were pars. Pretty impressive performance for her to come away with a 3-stroke championship. And again, as you and I have already mentioned, some years of eligibility, not just for her, but for the rest of the team. So, excuse me. That'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out in the Missouri Valley. As we pivot, speaking of other conferences, Alan Ward. Alan Ward's got a new home.
Yeah.
Go Pokes. Let me find the tweet here. Believe he's at McNeese State.
Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Yeah, Lake Charles. You're going to tell your Lake Charles story, Neil?
That's a long one. But I did tell, I will tell you this. I called a game there in 1983, believe it or not. It was through circumstances that I won't go into.
I was negative two.
I know. But anyhow, 83-84 season. And I was just a kid, and they needed me to go down and call a game. And someone said, hey, they have a really good player down there. Keep an eye on him. And I think he had I didn't think he was that good. He had 4 points at halftime. So he's like, isn't that good.
Okay.
But I think he ended with 37. Joe Dumars, you ever heard of Joe? So he turned out he was pretty good.
Are you serious?
Yes, I am serious. I'm serious.
Joe, I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm going to go look at the numbers.
Yeah.
So Joe Dumars.
Yeah.
Wait a second. All right. So we have the internet.
So I don't know if you could call it that game, but he was in the 30s in that game. And didn't have much at halftime. Halftime is not much.
You said 1983?
The 83-84 season. I think what it would be.
Sure is. Hold on, Neil. Hold on to our butts, because I think I've got the game here. Sure did. You played on December 5th, 1983, Murray State of the Ohio Valley Conference. McNeese won 68-64 in the Lake Charles Civic Center.
How many Dumars have? I'm curious to see how good the memory is.
Opponent conference. I'm trying to bring up the games. Give me just a second. Bear with me, because I think I can get it.
I want to see how much I've embellished. I do know at halftime, the kid's not that good. He's really just not that good. And then, holy smokes. I just remember every shot, he'd go down into the corner and hit another.
I'm trying to pull up the box score. I've got it on Sports Reference. They have an entire list of the games, and I'm just trying to pull up the box score really quick. And I've got the roster for Murray State that year. Dang it.
Did have some good seafood that night. I do remember that. Coach Green took us out to some place.
So here's who's on that racer team. Lamont Sleets, Craig Talley. Is it Veda Martin?
Veda Martin.
Veda, okay. Brian Stewart, whose daughter is now coming to Murray State.
There you go.
Oh, man. Craig Jones, is it Mike Lamb?
Lom.
It is Lom, L-A-H-M. See, this is before my time. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Willie Holland, David Youngblood, Curtis Davis, Derek Lindauer.
Yeah, Lindauer. 3-point specialist out of Evansville.
And Gary Jefferson. That was your roster.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the box score, and I just don't think it's going to let me do it.
May not.
But you won 68-64.
Did they win that game, really?
McNeese did.
Oh, I thought you said the Racers.
Yeah. No, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, lost. No, McNeese did. Close though. Now we're on a hunt. I'm gonna get. Ouch. I'm gonna.
You're not gonna find be under, it'd be midnight for right here, Ed.
68-64. But you're exactly right, Joe Dumars. Unbelievable. Joe Dumars was awesome. Dumars is a Hall of Famer.
Well, I don't know that. You're the NBA guy, not me.
I can't remember.
He was really good in the NBA.
Yeah, he was a first round draft pick.
He was an All Star.
First round pick, 18th overall in the 1985 NBA draft. So right before I was born, Neil.
Thank you.
No problem.
Were you 11?
I was later? Not. No.
Oh, yeah, you weren't 11.
11 years later, I 11 was.
11 years later.
Dumars played 14 years in the NBA. I just don't. He is in the Hall of Fame. I love it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, two-time NBA champion, six-time All-Star, three-time All-NBA. I can't believe you see Joe Dumars. 1985-86 All-Rookie, five-time All-Defensive, and the 88-89 Finals MVP. Man, that's awesome. And the Racers almost beat Joe Dumars.
Well, I bet you when Brian Stewart comes around, he probably will have a – I bet he remembers that game. Those guys always remember their games.
Yeah. Man, he had a great career. That's so awesome, Neil. I didn't know you'd seen Joe Dumars and it was against the Racers.
Yep.
That's freaking great. Okay, we totally went down another rabbit hole, but it was a great one. McNeese State, congrats, Alan Ward, yes. Home of Joe Dumars.
The other thing I saw, and I'd never seen this before in my life.
Okay. Ed,
at halftime, usually we'd just have some stupid stuff.
Sure.
Everyone did. It wasn't just us. They had the Cowgirl Kickers. It was a dance team before dance teams, and they came out and had a performance of their dance team, the Cowgirl Kickers at McNeese State. Still remember that.
Incredible. Incredible. Of course, that's back when the party was happening, you know?
Well, you also remember I was in my 20s, so I really do remember the Cowgirl Kickers, Ed, fondly.
Of course you do.
Yes.
So here's the lead line. And here's probably where the interesting tie comes. Alan Ward, veteran athletic administrator of 31 years, including 17 as the director of athletics at Murray State and Abilene Christian, will join McNeese's admin staff as deputy AD and chief operating officer. McNeese AD Heath Schroyer announced today. Heath Schroyer ought to be a name that people are familiar with around here.
Yeah.
Was a pretty successful UT Martin men's basketball coach. And I is Heath, if I'm not mistaken, is Heath still the men's basketball coach down there?
I don't know.
He's director of athletics. He served as the men's basketball coach for three seasons and then was named director of athletics in June of 2020.
Well, from what I understand, this is because he doesn't have a lot of experience in the administrative end of it. And this is it'd be a big help to have Alan there.
Man, I didn't realize Heath Schroyer wasn't coaching anymore. I knew he had taken the job at McNeese after UT Martin, but now he's director of athletics. He's AD. That's incredible. The things we learn on a Wednesday evening. Yeah. Well, congratulations to Alan Ward, and it makes a lot of sense now where the tie comes.
Right.
Alan Ward had a lot of really strong OVC connections, Heath Schroyer being one of them. Really cool. Really cool nugget there. Congratulations to Alan. And again, another former racer having success at the next level. We leave you guys with a few small details. John Morant playing pretty well in the NBA playoffs. The Memphis Grizzlies are 1-1 in the series against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
They were shocked at home on the first one, though.
They were. They had really, really good shot selection and just weren't able to convert. And Minnesota played their ass ends off, quite frankly. Just out-rebounded Memphis, did some things to Memphis that Memphis wasn't particularly, used to seeing. Ja in the playoffs right now in the first two games has scored 32 and 23, and we'll continue to give updates as the playoffs go along. These series take long time. It now moves to Minnesota for three games. You got to think, I mean, it's possible that this goes to game seven. It's also possible Minnesota wins three in a row. It's possible Memphis wins three in a row. That's sometimes the way that it all goes. But Memphis, of course, heavily favored as the two seed. But yes, Ja scored 55 points in the first two games combined. He has gone 19 for 24 from the free throw line. He's also averaging 9 assists and 6.5 rebounds, just 3 turnovers. Shooting 50% from the field, and he's made 2 of 6 threes. Just,
pretty good.
You know, stuff. Oh, and by the way, he's finalist for Most Improved Player of the Year. And that should be announced relatively soon. It's alongside Darius Garland of the Cleveland Cavaliers, which certainly there's some consideration there, considering Cleveland's rebound, and DeJounte Murray. So for the San Antonio Spurs. And Murray's really good. So I'd be interested to see where that goes. I was actually surprised to see Morant in Most Improved Player conversation. I thought Desmond Bane, his backcourt teammate. Uh-huh. I thought, there was a long list of guys that I thought. Jordan Poole, who spent time in the G League last year, is averaging 30 points per game in the playoffs right now for the Golden State Warriors. Thought those were guys that probably were going to be in that most improved conversation. But Morant, not trying to take anything away from him, he's even come out on social media and said, man, Jordan Poole, you know, Jordan Poole, you know, Desmond Bane, my teammate, other guys are more deserving of this award. But, you know, that's the kind of character Ja has. Meanwhile, Cameron Payne, in a slightly different situation for the Phoenix Suns, they're tied 1-1 right now with the New Orleans Pelicans. Some tough news, too. Devin Booker, after 31 first-half points earlier this week, had a tightness in his other hamstring, not the one he injured in the regular season.
That's not good.
Not ideal. They think he's going to be out for a couple of games, which is going to ramp up Cam's playing time, I think. He's going to need some help off the bench. He's not had to play a lot in these first two games. 17 minutes. He's averaging 17 minutes. He's only taking 12 shots. So not really a lot of experience. He's got a lot of playoff experience. I don't mean that. I'm saying he's not really played a lot in these first two games. And what he has played, limited numbers. 6 points last night. 2 points the game before. He's got 4 total turnovers, so about 2 per game. He's not really been able to put together the numbers that he was putting together in the regular season, which, like I said, in the month of March and April, he was averaging 10 points per game. So we'll see as his role matriculates one direction or another where that's headed. You have to wonder, with Booker hurt, you know, do we see more minutes for Cam? But it's crazy to think the number one and the number two teams have Murray State Racers helping guide them in different ways.
It's good.
It's
good selling point.
It's a huge selling point. I mean, it's wild to me from that standpoint. Like, I don't want to think too much about it, but if the Suns and the Phoenix and the Grizzlies, you know, if they play the chalk line, they're playing each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine being a Racer fan deciding who you want to go to the NBA Finals? Seriously, it's like, dude, yeah. If you're a Racer fan. And you like Cam just as much as you like Ja, or you like Josh, right, as much as you like Cam, or whatever generation you are. They're not that far apart from graduation perspectives. How do you sit there at home and say, man, I guess it's kind of a win-win because you both make the Western Conference Finals. One of you is going to go to the championship, so a Racer's going to the championship either way. But how do you feel about it? Do you want Cam because it's a redemptive arc and – you know, he's been playing well, and Phoenix has been the best team in the West. Or do you want Ja because he's the next up and coming star? How do you play that out?
I don't know. I'll be watching baseball, Ed, so I'm not really sure. I will flip over and see how that's turning out.
Well, it's crazy to think that if it plays out, I don't want to wish too much of the season away because there's so much basketball that's got to be played. But that's extremely possible.
Yeah,
we close here with baseball. We'll talk more about Murray State baseball and Murray State softball next time around. Both teams still have 11-12 games left in conference play. Baseball, I believe, is 18-18 right now, and softball is 30-11-1. And you and I briefly talked prior to the podcast. I mean, you win 10 of the next 12 conference games, and Murray State softball is looking at the pinnacle of a 40-win season, which I think is certainly plausible, the way that they've been playing, you know, knock on some wood there.
Yeah.
And you get a 40-win season, I got to think, somebody can correct me here, got to think you get an at-large bid into an NCAA bracket, into a regional.
If needed.
Right, exactly. Yes. Let's talk about this really quick. Major League Baseball. How you feeling right now, Neil?
Well, pretty good.
Yeah, you're wearing
the lead. We just won 2-0. Well, I said that. We were up 2-0 when I came inside. I don't know that. Yeah, 2-0. Sure. Yeah, I feel pretty good. 7-3. That's 700 ball.
Ohtani had a perfect game through 5.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched most of his last game when he pitched. He was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So
tonight, well, L.A. spotted him a 6-run lead in the first inning against Houston. They moved to 8-5, 5-2 on the road. He gave up 1 hit and 1 walk, struck out 12 in 6 innings. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. And you're all right. He was terrible because that dropped his ERA to 4.40.
Yeah. He had a rough game. Really bad.
Yeah.
But I mean, you play enough ball, you're going to have bad outing. And he had it too. But the thing about him, he can always redeem himself with a bat.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
oh,
so
my
if
gosh.
If he has a bad outing, that's all right. I'll get 3 hits.
So we really don't have a ton of separation. I mean, I could talk about the Cincinnati Reds and how they're 2-11. and have lost 9 in a row since the president's son came out and said that the fans have nowhere to go. The Reds' differential, run differential, is minus 37, and I'm sad inside. I'm sad outside, too. I'm sad all over. But you don't have a ton of separation anywhere else. The Reds are the worst team in the league right now. That's not even close. Even the Texas Rangers, who spent a crap ton of money in the offseason, are 2-8, but their run differential is minus 14. You have, here's the top of the divisions. You have the Toronto Blue Jays tied with the New York Yankees, both 7-5 after 12 games. You have the Cleveland Guardians, sorry, Neil, and the Chicago White Sox, both 6-5 with a half game lead over the Kansas City Royals, who might be interesting this year. We'll see. The Los Angeles Angels and the Seattle Mariners are technically 1-2. Mariners have one game back alongside the Oakland Athletics that are 7-6. So, of course, the West will be really interesting. I'd like to see the Angels, if Mike Trout can stay healthy, those guys make it. Otani, you know, Rendon, so on and so forth. You've got the New York Mets are 9-4. They have a 3.5 game lead right now in the National League East. You have, of course, the Cardinals are 7-3. I'll let you talk about them for a minute since, you know, whatever. They're playing well, of course. And then the Los Angeles Dodgers have a one game lead over the Giants, Rockies, and Padres. And the West, golly, the National League West is going to be, we knew it was going to be really good. All four of those teams, Neil, have a positive run differential through 14 plus games or through 12 plus games. Plus 32, plus 23, plus 9, and plus 18. That's filthy. Your wild card may come from the West.
May do it. Now's a good time, I think, Ed, to go ahead and make the move to the into the light with the Cardinals.
I'd rather piss up a flagpole.
You can that way, I mean, you've seen over the last few, you don't have to be loyal to anything. Just come on over. Just come on over. To heck with your old team. Just come on over to the new team.
Wow, Neil.
We got beer and Clydesdales, Ed. I'm telling you.
I love the Clydesdales.
So, you know.
I'll tell you this. Working at WKDZ, those Clydesdales, because of I-24 being so close to St. Louis, you know, the path to St. Louis, the Clydesdales actually stop at our exit, like, all the time.
Of course, yeah.
So they just kind of taunt me and wave at me.
Say they want you. They're there. Come on.
Jeez, the loyalty. I can't believe you made the loyalty joke. That's
Gibson,
terrible.
Gibson, musical.
I have Bob Gibson's baseball card from 1973. I love 73 and 74 tops, by the way. They're gorgeous products. My mom bought me a Roberto Clemente 1974 the other day.
Yeah, you showed me.
Yeah, snag that. And I digress. I have Bob Gibson's autograph. I love Cardinal players. Mm-hmm. I just don't like the organization. I just want the Reds to be better. And it's really freaking...
It's not going to happen, obviously, so just come on over.
No, we have a 154 win percentage right now, Neil.
Well, it'll get better than that.
Will it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes. Come on. Tommy Lasorda said it best. You're going to win 54 games no matter what. No matter how bad you suck, you're going to win 54.
Because you're always going to take the final.
But you're also
going to
lose 54. It's what you do with the other 54 that matters. Sometimes you can win all of them and you get 108 wins.
Which is possible.
Most of the time you don't, yeah. But take a look. The suckiest of the sucky teams, 54 wins.
Yeah, because baseball is baseball.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, because it's average.
It's the one thing, because if you've played baseball, and I played baseball and then played softball while I was in my like 26, 27. It's the one sport, if you shoot three perfect shots in basketball, they go in. You get 2, 3, or 1 point if it's a free throw.
Right.
That's what happens. You could mash four balls to the wall, crush, line drives, out.
Because outfielders,
out. Yeah. And you're 0-for-4 or hit 2 pop-ups. I had one, I can still remember this, Ed, in my entire career, I had one walk-off hit. It was a pop-up. They walked Gary Mitchell to get to me because he was a really good hitter. I wasn't as good. I popped it up behind first base. Behind second base or the second baseman, first baseman, right fielder, it drops. 2-run score, we win. I get mobbed. I popped it up and got a winning hit.
Because baseball, man.
Because of baseball. That's baseball for you.
Yeah.
You know, you shoot a bad shot in basketball, and generally it's not going in, and you lose.
Yeah. You're right. Everybody in the stands in a pop-up is like, oh, that's an automatic out. And then it's like it drops because it's a bloop, the wind, whatever. No one's fast enough to close in on it. And because of positioning, ball dies. Guys run.
I know.
You're right. That's true.
Stuff like that. It's a weird sport. I love it, but it is weird.
The Cardinals, I will give you your due diligence with the start of 7-3. We can briefly talk about it. Nolan Arenado is
two homers tonight.
I know. Well, he had the 2-run homer.
Oh, he did? I thought he hit 2 solo homers.
He launched a 2-run homer in the 9th to win it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the 9th inning. So now you've taken 2 back-to-back 2 against the Marlins. You split with the Brew Crew.
Oh, what a night. Okay.
Yeah, and you of course took 2 of 3 against the Pirates. It's a great start. I mean, I do think the Cardinals will win the Central. I actually do. Cubs are going to be better this year. They're younger, energetic. You made all those trades. You know, I think Schwindel's going to be awesome. Is it Suzuki?
Yeah.
Been untouchable
pretty
offensively.
Much.
I love the Central. I'm hoping to catch a game or two before the season's out. Man.
I'm going to go watch 3 the second week of May.
Oh, so soon.
Cardinals and Orioles.
Okay.
I'm going to see 3 games.
That'll be great. Where are the Orioles right now? They're not. Are they as miserable as they were last year?
Well, I'm not sure they're that miserable, but they're not great.
They're 4-8.
But it was easy to get tickets to Cardinals and Orioles.
Oh, that's fair.
I did say, here's something that
better
fans,
than the Reds.
Here's something that fans may not know, and I'm sure they released this, and I didn't really know, but I've watched a lot of baseball so far, and in one of the games, right now, teams in your division, you play 19 times. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Next year, that's going to go to 14.
Okay. Where are the other 5 going?
Here's what's going to happen. Now that everybody plays the same baseball, you're going to play every team in the league every year. So the Reds will play the Yankees at home maybe next year, and then they'll play them on the road the next year.
That's
they'll
good
play the Mariners.
That's good
play
for the game.
Every team in baseball every year.
Tell me that's good for the game.
I think it's really good.
Okay.
I like
okay.
when they talked about it.
Because I like that.
That's a heck of an idea. I really liked it. So you know that at least every other year, you're going to get to see, you know, whoever, the Yankees, the Guardians, the Angels. Mike Trout, he's going to be coming to St. Louis once every 2 years. He's going to be coming to Cincinnati once every 2 years, providing he's still with the Angels and healthy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I just thought about that from a fan perspective, and that's brilliant.
So you get to see all the great players in the game in your city
at least
every 2 years.
Yeah, on a rotator.
Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. And then the other fan base will do
right.
the same.
It is fewer games against your division opponents, and that's how they're going to come up with the rest of the games. But I heard them discussing that, and I thought, that is an amazing idea. Sometimes baseball floors me. It's like, you came up with something that was really good.
Yeah, instead of wasting all of winter –
yeah.
Talking about money.
That's right. But, so I just thought if fans haven't heard that, that's what was discussed, and it was on a game, so I'm assuming that that's what they're going to do.
I love it. It's brilliant. Neil, it's been fun. It's been real, and it's been real fun. I know we're going to have more news. Obviously wanted to meet this time around because certainly a lot of news had come up, and I would like to think, you know, in the next couple of weeks or so, we'll have more news hit the track, and we'll talk about it. So
we might even have 10 players before May's over.
Might even have some rotation players.
You might be able to sub off the bench.
It's possible.
It's looking that way.
Neil, appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Thanks.